From the Land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 12th day of December 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about this morning's monthly World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates Report with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. USDA raise ending stocks for soybeans by 20 million bushel, that on increased competition from South America, and lowered the corn ending stocks by 50 million bushels, as the ethanol grind has been quite strong. We'll take those numbers up, along with taking a look at the acreage battle in the United States, not in particularly for the coming year, but for the past couple of decades. Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist, will help us explore how those numbers have changed and how the wheat acres have waned extensively over time. And then as we wrap up our half hour together, we'll discuss the weather forecast. To that with Don Day. He's at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. And it all happens right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Hey, one other item before we get started. Don't forget to join us this evening in El Paso at South Point Park at the community building there on the south end of El Paso, Illinois. We'll have a Will Ag panel, including Mike Zuzolo, Ellen Dearden, and Steve Erdman. Starts at 7 o'clock, open and free to everybody. Hope to see you there this evening.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Tuesday afternoon. It's the 12th day of December, USDA Report Day. Wayne Nelson is here. He's from L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, the United States Department of Agriculture, of course, at 11 o'clock, updating the numbers. Some things changed, but not a lot happened in Chicago. What'd you see?
Well, that's what we saw, was not a lot happening. Basically, along the way, we did see the increase in ethanol usage that took another 50 million bushels off the corn. That was a nice surprise for us. We didn't know that they would do that for sure, and they'd left our export projections the same. But they took off 25 million in the exports in the beans, but added five back into usage in the seed. So we did see a little bump for a while, and I think the South American weather took over at the end of the day and pulled the beans on back down.
Yeah, so did it say there would be rainfall in Argentina? I didn't catch that forecast.
Well, 6 to 10, the 6 to 10 day forecast is throwing some much needed moisture into that area. Of course, that's still out at least 6 to 10 days, but for the rest of this week, no, it's still going to be warm and dry down in Argentina. So, they bear the crops. They did cut their ratings back a little bit in Argentina.
Two things happening here. We'll get to the holiday season pretty shortly, wondering what the market normally does there.
Well, I think, we're going to be sort of a choppy trade here along the way. A lot of times we'll start slowing down on trade and a little thinner trade, and we might see a little moves as such that way. A lot of times we'll, gain a little speed going into Christmas, but this looks just like more of the same in the on the sideways type trade, Todd.
And then as we've got now past the December WASDE figures, we'll look forward to the final crop production report for the current marketing year and the January final numbers as well. Any expectation for that or the grain stocks to show in anything of interest?
Well, I mean, that's what they're going to be looking at, because we didn't, is to get what the actual grain stocks are going to be and see if they're right, or if we have the usage that way. You know, we have had some awfully big livestock numbers here. They continue to grow and stay large, and we're hoping that we can see a little more feed disappearance because of that. The one thing that could come into play here is I know that the White House is trying to get the ethanol-producing states senators together, and along with the gasoline and oil people, to see what they can do about some of the problems of some of the small refineries and what's going on. But that generally, if they can make a bargain on something, isn't going to probably be good for agriculture.
What are farmers mostly asking you about at this point as we head into the end of the year?
What, if anything, is the good word or the hope or what we can be looking for? Because most of them are wanting higher prices. It's sort of a sad story, because we have to say it's something we can't see on the horizon now. We know talking about it could be a La Nina, which is our favorite word of the month, but we need to hear it more. The other thing is, can we see China come into this ethanol market more aggressively, or somehow buying corn as to help out with that? Because we are knowing that they have some goals set forth to be at the 10% level here by 2020.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again in a week.
All right. Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason, joined now by Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. He's written another article for the FarmDoc Daily website. This time he's taking a look at acreage in the United States, crop acreage that is, and how it's been divvied up among the commodities since 1996. I think the reason you start there is this is when freedom to farm came into place and the market really was supposed to take over the acreage battle year in and year out.
That's correct. And so we began looking at what acreage done in 1996. And because, as you say, that was the year when the market forces should be what influencing acreage. And we sort of see two distinct periods in there since 1996. And from basically 1996 to 2012, we saw both corn and soybean acreages increase in the United States. And that, to a large extent, came at the expense of wheat acres. So corn and soybeans increased and wheat acres decreased from 1996 through 2012. Can explain a lot of that by just looking at the relative profitability of the crops. Corn and soybeans were more profitable than wheat.
There was a distinct drop at one point in soybeans. I take it some of this had to do with the build out of ethanol.
Yeah, so we had a big blip, if you will, in 2008. Corn acres took a big increase, soybean acres took a decrease, and then they sort of came back together. I would attribute that to the ethanol build out and sort of those high corn prices and lower soybean prices in that year. But even given that blip, you just saw a general increase in corn and soybean acres.
Interestingly enough, while the corn and soybean ratio, the difference between how many acres of corn and how many acres of soybeans have been planted, has been narrowing for quite some time. It does vary a little bit year in and year out, and it's been on an uptrend, but wheat has been on a downtrend since, 1982?
Yeah, so wheat acres have been going down. We hit a relatively low number in 2017 of 34 million acres planted. Again, that's been on a very downward trend. You could attribute that to a number of factors. Probably the bigger one is that corn has increased its yields at a relatively faster rate than wheat, and that has caused the relative profitability of corn to be higher than wheat, and corn has taken over the feed grain market.
So it was back in the late 1990s that soybean acres outpaced the wheat acres. Corn acres in that same time frame moved above the wheat acres. They've been turning down since then. However, soybeans have traveled below corn acres for that time until this past year, and they're about equal.
So in 2017, you know, if you looked at round right, you're at 90 million acres of both corn and soybean planted in 2017. And they were roughly equal. Since 2012, we've seen corn acres decrease some and soybean acres continue to increase, and they became equal this year. I believe USDA is projecting them to be roughly equal next year as well at 91 million acres. But sometime in the future, we may see more soybean acres than corn acres in this country. What's probably driving that, or what is driving that, is continued strong export growth for soybeans. You know, we're exporting over 50%, or projected to export over 50% of the crop, and that has been growing, and that's our growth area.
Yeah. So just to reference that again, since 2012. Corn acres have been on a decrease for the most part. Wheat acres certainly have been on a decrease for the most part. And soybeans have been uptrending that whole time, and in a pretty big way, because they've been pulling from apparently both commodities.
Yep.
And I'm wondering, when you look across the Midwest, or across the United States, where those acres come from, do you have an idea? I'm assuming wheat acres come from the Great Plains or
something. Yeah, wheat acres become from the Great Plains. Soybean acres have been coming from a lot of places, but where we've been seeing more of a growth in the soybean acres, if you're looking at the Corn Belt, is in the Eastern Corn Belt. Indiana, Ohio, and Illinois have been increasing soybean acres and reducing corn acres.
In my memory, I seem to think do Ohio farmers plant more bean acres than they do corn acres now?
That is true. Corn beans are more than corn in Ohio, and it's roughly the same in Indiana. And we're approaching near equality here in Illinois.
Is that because of the river system, do you suppose?
That's always a good question. Why we're acting more than the Western Corn Belt, and that's a good question. I don't really have a good answer for that, because if you look at the relative profitability, the same forces are at work. Indiana and Ohio makes more sense, because if you look at their corn yields, our average corn yields are lower than Illinois, but their soybean yields are relatively about the same. So the relative profitability of those two crops, soybeans are more profitable than corn by a larger number in Ohio and Indiana. Illinois, we've over the past several years, even in central Illinois, we would project soybeans to be more profitable than corn, same way next year, and we're seeing that come out to be more of a corn-soybean rotation, or people moving away from corn.
Because you watch the FBFM numbers from Illinois, is there a distinction between above I-80 and below I-80?
So if you look across the state, in southern Illinois, there's more soybean acres than corn acres, and that's probably roughly 70. If you look in the mid part of the state, it's roughly equal. If you look in the northern part of the state, we're still heavier corn than soybeans. Part of that, the heavier corn than soybeans in the northern part of the state may have to do with harvesting. You have you have a shorter window for soybean harvest during the day, and you have a shorter window for harvest overall in northern Illinois. So maybe that has something to do with it. But if you look, we see more corn acres in northern Illinois than in central and southern Illinois.
And for southern Illinois, despite the lack of wheat acres, or really the heavily declining number of wheat acres there, I'm assuming that it's double crop soybeans that make that the reason there are more soybean acres there, or is it just...
That's part of it, but we're also seeing more soybeans after soybeans, so both of those factors play into those decisions. In fact, we will be releasing soybeans after soybeans budgets this year as we begin to think more and more about that decision.
You've got enough information to make that happen?
Yeah, we will be doing that this year.
All right, good enough. Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
That, of course, is Gary Schnitke. He's an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Tuesday afternoon. We always take a look at what's been happening in the agricultural energies, and we're now joined by Stephen Platt. He's at Archer Financial Services out of Chicago. Steve, thanks for being with us for the day.
Oh, my pleasure.
Hey, I want to start with diesel fuel today. I think it had, or heating oil, it had kind of an interesting day. What happened there?
Well, we did see some strength coming into the market, not only from the colder weather conditions, but also from the pipeline leak that was evident in the North Sea here, reported yesterday, leading to some shutdowns in those pipelines. And given the reliance upon heating oil and diesel in that area, certainly the potential for exports, I think, helped the diesel market reach a new high for the move here today. Crude also benefited initially, but it's surprising. The markets all ended up on a weak note. I think that certainly suggests that we are straining these markets in terms of how high they can go without eliciting a production response. We saw this past month OPEC come through with a new, well, actually an extension of their current agreement, with some caveats that basically suggested that they were going to be moving somewhat slower in terms of maybe extending the agreement much past June, and that some move to unwinding the agreement might start to take place. So we do have a lot of uncertainty coming into the market, not only in terms of the supply side, governing the North Sea supplies, which are being affected by that pipeline leak, but also the U.S. production potential. The U.S. EIA, or Energy Information Agency, basically indicated we were going to see record high production for the U.S. next year in 2018, totaling over 10 million barrels. I think that is being encouraged by the higher prices, and certainly is the production response, at least from those members which are those producers which are not part of the current agreement. So overall, certainly we do have some uncertainty out there that certainly needs to be respected. And I do think the market here did reach a high here in the crude oil, at least at 59, and certainly the potential exists if the temperatures do start to turn to the down, or at least warmer next week, that we could see even the heating oil or distillate market start to show some pullbacks as well. Nat gas has been under a lot of pressure. I think those producers or ag producers who dry corn certainly have to be aware that these prices are some of the lowest prices we've seen in over a year. Might even want to start locking in some prices if they're acceptable for their drying operations, maybe for next year's crop. So we do have coming up tomorrow and some other numbers on the day after in terms of global supply demand that one needs to be aware of. OPEC will be coming out with their monthly report and the EIA report. In addition, I think one thing has to be looked at is there is a White House meeting in terms of fresh biofuels talks to possibly look at the mandate once again, which certainly will need to be watched closely tomorrow to see if there are changes in the mandate being made, which could certainly have an adverse impact on ethanol prices and maybe even other biofuels such as oil or diesel fuel as well.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time. Of course, that's Stephen Platt with Archer Financial Services back in just 2 minutes. This is the Closing Market Report for Tuesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Don Day now here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Let's start in the United States and I suppose work our way from your part of the world across to the East Coast. Tell me what the weather is like today.
Well, we are definitely finding ourselves in a pattern that's gotten a lot more winter-like, especially across the central and eastern half of the nation. Been a pretty crazy last 10 days. We've had snow in Houston and Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, and Georgia already. And the pattern is going to favor a lot of winters we look ahead during the second half of this month and into early January. I'm still expecting some ups and downs, at least here over the next week or so. We're going to have some cold, but we're going to have interdispersed in that some warm-ups. But as we get into Christmas week and into the new year, there's going to be a large part of the USA that is going to be looking at a lot of cold coming in from the Great White North.
Is this an Arctic blast that will dump us much lower than we normally would be, or we are just going to get cold as usual?
No, I would put this under an Arctic blast for sure. It may not come all at once, but what we are seeing is a pattern we've seen in winters before, where you get, you'll hear it on the news, the polar vortex, so to speak, a pocket of really deep cold air that forms up in the higher latitudes and then settles into Canada and a large portion of the United States and kind of sticks around for a bit. And that's what the last 10 days of December and into early January looks to be like. So this will mean lake effect snows. This will mean some sub-zero temperatures across the northern plain states. The good news is we've got a while before that happens, but the writing is really on the wall, and the confidence is growing that that's what's going to unfold.
If memory serves, this oscillates from one side of the globe to the other, meaning that it pops across the top of the globe, and sometimes the cold air is in Russia, Ukraine, and then drops back across the top of the globe and through Canada into the United States. And if we're really cold, that they might have a warmer set of temperatures in parts of Russia, especially the wheat-growing regions of the Black Sea. Is that right?
Well, it'll come and go. You know, Europe right now has experienced some severe cold. They've had problems with an oil pipeline there cracking due to severe cold, and that is going to spread across portions of Europe as well. But you do have warm pockets and cold pockets in this type of pattern. But one area that may be warm for a while or currently will likely go back to cold. So there will be some shifting, and those areas you just mentioned have the possibility of getting very cold over the coming weeks.
And then turn your attention to South America. We've been following the weather, of course, in Brazil, but Argentina particularly closely because they were dry. What are conditions like today?
Well, Argentina is got a dry problem for sure. They are in a pattern here in the next week or two, maybe even longer than that, that is going to favor drier than normal conditions. So we are looking at what is going to be some dry problems there. There's really no significant rain in Argentina's forecast. A little further north, it's cooler and more wet in Brazil. So we have some contrast between Brazil and Argentina. But right now, Argentina looks to be on the short end of the stick, at least here for a little longer when it comes to rain.
Don, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Don Diaz with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You can join us tonight in El Paso at the Community Building. That's in South Point Park on the south end of El Paso, Illinois, at 7 o'clock. I'll be there for one of our Will Ag panels, along with Ellen Dearden of Ag Review out of Morton, Illinois, Steve Erdman from EFG in Chicago, and all the way from Atchison, Kansas, Mike Zuzulo is coming in from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Starts at 7 o'clock at the El Paso Community Building in South Point Park. I'm Todd Gleason.